Me.
Okay, I'm all warmed up. You warmed up?
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about me.
No, me. That's what I was saying. Me.
No, we're talking about me today. We're not talking.
You know what? Hold on a second. I got the quarter right here. Let's flip a coin.
Oh, we're going to flip a coin now?
And there it is.
Okay.
And
all right.
Oh, you won.
Ah.
Yeah.
I
know. I didn't let you call anything.
All right. So we are talking about me.
Let's talk about you.
Me. Oh, wait a second. We're rolling.
Oh, well, let's roll. Well, I'm Rich.
And I'm Mark.
And we are
two guys on Block Island.
Yeah.
That's better.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. So let's, as we led up to, we're going to talk about the you, me, not
I
me,
guess we're
me.
Talking about me.
We're going to talk about you today.
We're talking.
It's been a long time. We're in season 5, and I think we've both told snippets of our stories.
Yeah.
But I think it's time that we just focus on who the two guys on Block Island are.
So we have a little me time.
We're going to have a little you time today.
Okay.
For this episode.
Are you sure this is a good idea?
Absolutely not.
All right.
But I don't think it, you know. So welcome.
Well, you and I have talked about, because people have asked us, let's be honest.
Yeah.
People have, you know, listeners have been like, when are you guys going to interview each other?
Yeah.
And we're like, that's actually valid, right?
Yeah.
We've never actually sat down and interviewed each other for our story. I mean, we had me as Dr. Westchester, but that was about Dr. Westchester.
And we may, like I said, over time, we've let tidbits out, but let's focus on you for this episode.
Okay.
And then we'll do.
I'm a little nervous.
We'll do me later. You probably should be. Yeah.
You prepared questions?
In my head.
Do you have questions?
I do. I have questions.
What do you want to know?
Well, I'm going to lead in by saying, believe it or not, there's a lot about you I don't know.
Okay.
You know, people might not realize that.
It's true.
Like, we don't live together or, you know, we get together, do our podcast, and we know each other from, well, we're probably going to cover that ground when the time comes.
You're the interviewer.
I am. Well, we like to ask our guests when they first sit down, Mark.
See, this is what I'm afraid of.
What's your Block Island story?
I've already told a lot of it.
Yeah, but that's okay.
So I feel like I don't want to just be like, have this be like a rehash episode where everyone's like, oh, yeah, we heard this already.
Well, when did you come to Block Island?
All right. My Block Island story, I'll go through it quickly because it's not that. I know I've said all this before. Came out here as a kid.
Some of our listeners are older. They may have forgotten already.
Okay.
Because I know forgotten. I do.
Well, maybe it's a good thing I say it because I've probably forgotten it, most of it. I came out a couple times, day trips with like my family.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, like when I was like, you know, middle school age.
Okay. Did you stay or did you just day trip?
Over and back.
And where were you living? Where were you coming out of?
Western
Connecticut?
Western Mass.
Oh, that's right.
Yep.
Yeah. 413,
baby.
Yeah, 413.
Yep, born and raised.
So you would just do day trips out to the island?
A couple. Yeah. I wouldn't even say it was like a couple times.
You've been
spread
out a couple
over
of times.
About over the course of like 4 or 5 years.
How old are you?
I can tell you how I remember my first trip ever to Block Island. I think I maybe did.
or yourself.
I had a 10-speed bike. I was taking swim lessons. I was in like 6th or 7th grade at the local YMCA in Agawam.
Is it hard to swim with a 10-speed bike? Or?
Yes.
It's just funny.
Everything was hard for me.
I had a 10-speed bike and I was taking swimming lessons.
Everything was hard.
Was it the old school with like the curly handlebars?
Oh, yeah.
Like the racing
hell
bike?
Hell yeah, man. Yeah, it was like a knockoff.
Pre-mountain bike.
It wasn't like a really,
skinny tires.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you were taking swimming lessons.
Yeah. And while I'm on my way to swimming lessons and I had like my gym bag over my shoulder with my change of clothes, towel, blah, blah, blah. And it slipped down off my shoulder. I took my hand off and when I picked it, I looked up and I had smacked my eye in the corner of my eye, my orbital socket, into the back of like a flatbed trailer truck.
Oh.
And it, you know, split my eye open pretty good. And so I had stitches and all that. But I had the big bandage. This only happened like a week earlier, and we were going to Block Island that following weekend for the day with some neighbors. And so I'm on the ferry with this big eye patch, you know, everything's bandaged up. And then get to Block Island. We just go over by the surf hotel with the family that we're with. And we just, you know, we're swimming, messing around. And my mom's like, don't get the patch wet.
Don't get dry wet.
Yeah. Of course. Yeah, right. So, you know, I'm swimming. And this thing starts getting, janky.
Waterlogged.
Yeah. And then we get back on the boat and it's like one of the small, like the Nalsica or that? I don't know.
Yeah,
like
that
a
was,
small
yeah,
boat,
yeah,
one
yeah.
of the small ones. And this thing started to droop off and my mother's just like, just go in the bathroom and take it off. So I go in and the boat's packed. Middle of summer, and I go in the bathroom and I like take it off and look in the mirror, and it's like I look like someone like hit me with a bag of quarters. Like I look like Tyson at the end of
it. Before I forget to ask, was that the moment that you decided from then on in it was going to be tricycles for you?
Yeah. That's when I switched.
Yeah. So you can put a backpack in the basket. Yep. Yeah.
And that's how I switched to tricycles. Uh-huh. Yeah, but then I remember.
Thanks for listening, folks. This has been a great podcast.
You wanted to do this?
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm good. I'm good. Yeah.
But so, like, I looked in the mirror and I was just like, oh my God. I tried to, like, put the patch back on. I was like, this ain't happening. And I'm like, oh, shit. So, like,
Well, salt water is good for an injury.
I walk out the door and I'm like walking back to my parents and, like, I can just see people's faces looking at me. And their faces are like, like, aghast. And I'm like, oh, God. So that's my first memory of Block Island.
Was a soaking wet eye patch.
Leaving with a big old black eye.
Oh my God. So that's when you did a couple of family trips.
Yeah, we did that a few times. And then it wasn't until my Agawam buddies, Dave Simmons, Dave Gillette, Mike Canty, rest in peace,
now, did you,
Darren Evangelista, started going out there.
Oh, now were they first? I can't remember.
The younger guys.
I'm not trying to play dumb. I really don't.
The younger
pay too much attention
guys,
when you talk.
Smart. I wish more people should do that.
They're starting to. Right about now.
Yeah. Everyone's checked out like the second they heard it was about me. The younger Agawam guys.
Yep.
They were actually a year or younger than me in school, but they had started coming out before I did. And then,
And did they do the old, you got to come out, this place is great,
yep,
you're going to have a good time, yeah?
Yeah, I definitely have told that story before.
Yeah,
but.
And then how old were you about for your first summer?
I was 23. Yep.
96. Old enough to drink, dangerous.
Yep.
Yeah.
Did some of that.
And then we've talked, your first job was, what was your first job?
First job
was dishwashing?
I came out, I had a job at Island Moped.
Oh,
but
okay.
That didn't start for a couple weeks. So I was just kind of hanging around, living above Nick's. Again, I told the seagull story.
Yeah, yeah.
And then that all happened at this period. And then, I had dishwashing at Finn's at night. Moped job started. Then I got the bouncing job at Nick's about halfway through that first summer. And that's when I first started working at Nick's.
And did you still have to do, so were you mopeds by day and
mopeds
Nick's at
by
night?
Day, Nick's at night.
So you're working hard.
Yep. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Good work.
Typical
yep.
Block Island, awesome 23-year-old summer of like, yeah. Yeah, the morning schedule was like, I lived in the top right-hand room above Captain Nick's, if you're looking at it from the street, the right-hand uppermost dormer. And there was three sets of bunk beds. There was six of us, three sets of bunk beds. There was six of us in the room.
Yep.
And
were you able to room with your buddies?
Yeah,
it's me and so the whole gang,
all the Agawam guys.
Oh, nice.
And it was me, Steve, Jimmy LaJoy, Gravy. Oh, and that summer, that's when Dominic Nardini's half brother Sterling moved in with us in the middle of the summer, which is awesome. We corrupted him, and then
it's not that hard to do.
It was easy.
Mm-hmm.
And then the mornings were like 8 a.m. Johnny Leone would like be knocking on your door, like literally barge the door open. Hey, you're late. You know,
again,
get up and go to work. And then all day at the moped corner, grab a quick bite.
Did you ever actually watch the people do the moped test or were they doing it at that time?
Yeah, I was. That was my first job,
was watching them.
Moped demonstrator.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did them.
Were you? This could be a tricky question. Was there anybody you allowed to rent the moped that in the back of your mind you were kind of like, ooh, it's an if. It's a big if.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a few that are. Basically, if you didn't crash, they still do. It's kind of if you don't crash, you can go.
I mean, we knew like the island didn't like mopeds.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But it was different times too.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying like I intentionally like set.
No, no. Of course.
I wasn't like, oh, this guy's hammered. Let's go give him a moped. Oh, it'd be funny. But no, I mean, yeah, times I'm not sure about this one.
I see a lot of them running alongside. You have to do a lot of running?
Yeah.
Oh, you did?
Well, that's how, so when I started it, we had I hope I didn't tell these same stories, but the first year that I was there, we had these mopeds called Derbies, and they were a Spanish moped, I think, and they were heavy aluminum metal, sheet metal. They weren't plastic.
Right.
And the starters were all gone on them. They were like, this is in the years before they were like replenishing the moped fleet yearly, you know? Like these mopeds had been around for 10 years and they were like duct taped together and everything. It was, and you'd have to, all the electric starters were gone. So you'd have to start them by holding in the clutch, running alongside of it, a compression lever. And then at the right moment when you heard the engine kick in, you let go of the compression lever, give it a little bit of gas, but at the same time, grab the left hand brake so it doesn't get away from you. That was my demo.
So what did you tell people? Don't shut it off?
I told them exactly what I just told you. I'm like, they're like, wait a minute. Are you telling me if I get off this thing and I have to restart it, that's what I got to do? I'm like, yep.
Yeah.
So that deterred a lot of people from riding the moped.
Try to park at the top of a hill.
They're like, don't you have one with electric? Nope. I wouldn't even let them get the word start out of their mouth. Nope.
Oh my God. Wow.
See, we didn't give a fuck.
Yeah.
It was like,
It
Block Island, nobody expected anything. Like now everyone expects like, oh, I don't have a cup holder, you know.
And the speaker and
What do you mean I can't connect via Bluetooth?
Then how did you transition to bouncer? Because your physique does, no offense,
it back,
doesn't
thank
scream
you.
To me, bouncer.
Thanks for noticing.
But yet when I did it there with you, you're good.
I learned a lot at that job.
Yeah.
I learned a lot of what I needed to know about life at that job.
Yeah.
And the way I got my job was that at the time.
That explains a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, right? I know.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that makes sense.
Yeah.
The way I got the job was at the time, again, it was more of a local scene on the island. And the security staff at Nick's was, you know, had a lot of local guys that knew each other. And, you know, it was a. Nick's was a tougher place back then.
Yeah, and a little gang mentality among the...
It was just a different kind of bar at that point. It wasn't, you know...
Well, again, those expectations, like the cup holder, you know, people just had a different expectation.
Yeah, people expected, were happy if you gave them a cup with their drink.
Yeah.
Forget about the cup holder.
And more like the roadhouse...
Yeah, it was a roadhouse.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Roadhouse type. And you were Patrick Swayze.
No.
All right.
No, I was like...
No, but they... Yeah.
Yeah, not... Yeah. But anyways, so when you have a clientele and when you're in a place where like it's a little... Where that's what it is at the time, you know, you need people that can handle situations when they arise. And they did. But, you know, like inevitably... Something bad's going to happen. And there was, you know, some lawsuit pending or whatever, which I don't know what happened with, but, you know, kind of came down like from on high, like through management that like, you know, let's try and find a different way to solve these problems and whatever, because we can't have whatever. And so they were like, all right, so then they hired me.
Right?
And they're like, well, here's this. But yeah, you learned, but all my, that wasn't, I'm not, it's not exactly because Gravy already had a bouncing job. Like, and none of these guys, Steve Simmons, all those dudes, and none of them were like really big. So they all worked there too, but they just got me in, but it was funny. I was definitely the shortest out of all of them. So it's just kind of like the joke.
But there's so much that we've discussed with the frame of mind for the job and the whole idea of just diffusing whenever possible. And there is a way. There's almost always a way.
There is 99% of the time, there's a way.
Yeah.
That's
it. If you can talk it out, that's what I was learning.
Keep them talking.
Try to avoid the altercation.
Just keep talking.
Yeah. I was working with some guy. He's like, I got punched in the face. And I'm like, well, you shouldn't run down the street after the guy. That's not what we're here to do.
Yeah.
Stay in here.
Yeah.
Where did you get punched in the face? Oh, over there. Why were you over there?
Yeah. P.S. I'm like not saying came out of the gate some Jedi. I mean, I learned the heart. Like I was an idiot a lot of times. And
yeah, but we learned.
Could have handled things much, much better. But you do learn. Yeah. Because if not, you get punched.
So let's back up a little bit. So what did your folks do? Were they both worker? Did they both have careers?
Yeah, they were in public education.
And both teachers?
My dad started out as a high school art teacher. And he wasn't an artist. How he got the job was just they needed teachers, and he had a bachelor's degree. And they're like, "You like art?" He's like, "Well, I think I took an art history appreciation class." And they're like, "Great, you're the art teacher."
Really?
So he did that, yeah, in Glastonbury, Connecticut. And
but he didn't art history, or did he actually teach art? Art?
He did not teach art. Oh, no, he did. No, he did. He taught art. Like,
oh, really?
Yeah, he did. And turns out he was really good at it.
Well, actually. That's, you know. Seems like a little bit of artistry runs in your blood.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah. No, it was crazy. After he passed, I found a bunch of his paintings and drawings that were really cool. But yeah, so he was a high school art teacher, then went back and got his master's in business administration. And then he became a school superintendent in Western Mass. His first job was, he started in Holliston. We were almost moved to Boston or to Holliston, Mass. But then he only had that job for a year. Came back and then... He was the business administrator in Stockbridge, Massachusetts for a long time, and then Wilbraham. And my mom was a teacher's aide for special ed.
Yep, yep.
And then she was...
That's a tough job.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, I was just telling the story the other day, like she would come, like she had one year where there was like some, a pair of autistic kids that were, you know, really, did what autistic kids do. And my mom, you know, they would bite her and she'd come back, but it was a tough job, but she loved it. And then she ended up going to vocational and teaching landscape design, horticulture at like a vocational tech school.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. My mom could like break down a chainsaw.
Wow. No kidding.
Yeah.
Jeez Louise.
Yeah.
And then you, did you ever have to deal with either of them in whatever school you were going to school in, or no, they were in different schools?
No. They were in different schools, but they were like those, they were those annoying, like kind of public education parents who know, like they're involved in public education. So it's like, oh man, you know, like if something happened at school, they know the principal because they knew this guy from the next town. And you know, it was like, oh shit. So there was my wiggle room for fuckery was diminished because of my parents' involvement in public education.
You know what? That's a trait that I see going away. People see a relationship with a lot of parents these days see that relationship as a way to get their kid out of trouble.
Right.
You know,
exactly.
And I think that was, that was a thing back in the day. It was like, you better not screw up.
It was the opposite.
Yeah, my mom's going to know in a matter of 10 minutes if I do what you're telling me to do.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. Now it's the opposite.
And then you went on to college.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did not, but you did.
Yep.
And what did you go to college for?
I started out, I went for broadcast journalism at Syracuse, and I was there for 2 years, and then I figured at some point I was just like, oh, I don't know that you had to know anything about politics to be like,
it's hard for a kid to pick what they want to do.
Yeah. I'm like, isn't there just like a game show host category or course that I could take? Like, that's more my speed. And apparently not. You have to.
Yeah. You don't have a Bob Barker 101?
Yeah, like, something like that.
You know, that'd be perfect for me.
Yeah, kind of like Wink Martindale for dummies.
So then you switched.
So then I was like, and it was expensive. I was on a lot of financial aid. I had a couple of little like scholarships that I, you know, Rotary Club, again, like the Lions Club or whatever.
Yep, yep.
And, you know, like took out some loans, and it was like my parents were helping me, and I was working all, you know, summer jobs, and it was expensive. It was like 25 grand a year back in 91.
Yeah.
And that was a lot of money. So I was like, well, and it was a lot, Syracuse was a good, very good is a good school for communications. And I'm like, well, I'm not going to stay here and just get an English degree, because I didn't know what I wanted to do. I was like, so I guess I got to get an English degree. So I'm not going to stay there and spend that. So I went to UMass, transferred to UMass, and ended up with Steve and all my Agawam guys that I came to Block Island with.
And then it's kind of a personal question, but did you finish? Did you get a degree?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
And did you go into a field prior to Block Island, or?
I 2 years undergrad, graduated in time, and 4 years from UMass with a bachelor's in English. And then I spent another year getting certified to teach high school, 6 through 12.
And did you do it?
Yep.
How many years did you teach?
Two.
It's so hard for me to picture you as a high school teacher.
Yeah.
Yeah. It really is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But at some point you clearly thought, this isn't for me.
Yeah.
So does Block Island come into play during that time? Were you like teaching?
Yeah.
During the winter and Block Island in the summer?
Yep. Okay. I have a weird story. I feel like I've told this story before, but like the weird connection was from UMass. I played at a bar called Delano's, and the owner, Chick Delano, his girlfriend at the time, later his wife, Susie Reeder, Dr. Reeder up on Minister's Lot. So I knew Susie from Block Island, and then a few of my friends had started going out there, and I went out to play at Susie and Chick's wedding up at Minister's Lot, stayed with Dave Poggi above Finn's that night. And that was kind of like my first time, I think, back on Block Island since those day trips when I was a kid. And I was like, oh, Jesus, these guys are nuts. Like, what's happening out here? So that was like the first time I was like, oh, okay, those guys are back. But I mean, yeah.
Yeah. And then, that was maybe sort of the first time the carrot caught your eye of going, maybe changing gears. And
I was like, well, that's an option. That could be an option. If the bottom falls out, that could be an option.
When?
Yeah.
When the bottom falls out.
Yeah.
And you were, I didn't even know this. So you were already playing music at that time. Like, how young did you start playing music or know that you had a little?
First piano lessons were in fifth grade.
Okay.
Classical, like, you know, your basic.
Yeah.
Yep.
I took piano lessons.
Yeah. I did that for like 3 years, and I didn't really practice. And my piano teacher told my mom, like, stop paying for lessons because he's not, you know. But I had a good ear. So, yeah. And I like
clearly
listened to Billy Joel a lot. So I just kept doing that. And then I got in a garage band in sixth grade, and that was like.
A sixth grade garage band.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a little ahead of time. That's good.
It was awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was the path. I've just been playing in bands ever since.
Did the band have a name?
Second Thought.
Nice.
Yep.
Interesting.
Yeah, it was me, Dave Fazio, Mike Tassinari, Ted DeCosmo, and Craig Lepper.
Wow.
Yeah.
Remember all the names.
Yeah.
Sixth grade.
Yeah. Huh. Played all of the hits of the day.
So you went out to play at a wedding, crashed it in the Finn's employee housing.
Yep.
And then little did you know you'd end up back there doing dishes. And
there was one more illustrious overnight trip with Mike Shea and his dad, Ron Bulat, on Ronnie's boat. Dave DeMario was with us, and we went out for just no reason, overnighter on a boat. And I think we docked at Ballard's for the night.
I was just going to say, what was the marina of choice?
Ballard's.
That says a lot.
And, yep. And I think I was at Nick's all night because Steve and those guys had started working there.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you went where all your buddies were bouncing.
That was my first night at Captain Nick's ever.
Okay.
Like ever stepping foot in the place. And I remember a lot of it. And it was an epic first night.
Was it?
At Nick's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So that's really what I was like, okay. But I mean, I wasn't like, oh, I got to come back to this place. But then...
How did you taught a couple of years, and then did you decide, like, what was the changing moment? Do you remember? Did you have a specific moment where you just decided, you know what, I really want to do more in entertainment? And
me and my dad, when I told my parents after I got the teaching certificate after my, you know, the fifth year in college, I was like, I had already got the ball in motion to go to Block Island for my first summer with Steve, my roommate, who had got me the job at Island Moped.
And they knew that was a bad idea.
Well, I didn't tell them. And like I said, so I waited to the last because they kept saying, oh, what are you going to do? You'd apply for jobs? I'm like, yeah. And then eventually it got to be too late. It was like middle of May.
Oh, shucks.
And my dad's like, what are you doing? I'm like, well, actually, you know, I thought I'd take a year off and go to Block Island this summer, then maybe... You know, figure something out.
The sentence that no parent likes to hear.
So it was like, it was a big thing. And, we didn't even talk for like 6 months.
Really?
It was the longest I've ever, it was bad. And my mother was like, can't you guys just get along? But no, it was like bad. So anyway.
Well, it's hard because he probably, as a parent.
I get it now.
As a parent, I would say to watch your son hit the proudest moment of your life. I'm so proud he finished college, got his teaching degree.
You're going to go work at a
bar. And
then
you kick him in the nuts with the,
Yeah, these guys.
Take a year off.
I'm going to be living above a bar. Don't worry. It'll only last like a summer, Dad. I just want to do it for one summer.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you told him?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, so I did. But we got over it.
The
anyway.
The first full summer, did you stay like all the way through the fall, like to the Columbus Day thing? Or did you literally do Labor Day and out?
No, I stayed through into October.
Okay, so you did the full season.
I did the full season. Yeah, and I got here May 1st. So I was here a little bit on the early side.
Okay.
For the first season. Nice. But to get back to answer your question, why I got out of teaching, I had a few weird experiences. I liked the teaching part for the most part.
Yeah. You
know, like the kids were cool.
Yeah.
You know, but I also forgot to, I was teaching at my old high school where I graduated from.
Oh my
so it was
gosh.
Like, I was teaching with my old teachers. So I was like, welcome back, Cotter.
Oh man.
Yeah.
That must have been weird.
Yeah. It got there. Yeah. At times.
Wow.
At times like the, you know, the end of the year staff parties that you don't like. Teachers are wild, man. And you like, you grew up your whole lives looking at them like, oh, that's Mr. Jones, you know, yeah. Hey, teacher's geometry.
Here you are a couple
Mr.
years
Jones,
later.
Mr. Jones, motherfucking freak.
Yeah, I'm making out with Mrs. Schwartz, the librarian. I used to think about it. Now I can do it.
One of my favorite teachers that I ever had in high school. I had so many good teachers. One of them was Mr. Gage, my conceptual physics teacher. Art Gage was the best.
Yeah.
He was the coolest guy. I got Art Gage hammered on Jack Daniels the night of the teacher. Yeah, the staff.
I'm pretty sure those parties are banned. They no longer, I don't know anywhere that still allows all the teachers to get
together. Not with social media and camera phones anymore. I'll tell you that much.
No.
Yeah. But no. So months earlier, Art was this kind of guy. I had lunch with him every now and then, and I was having lunch with him. I was kind of like, you know, I like the teaching thing, but I just knew it wasn't what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
And I was like, so I was having lunch with
him. How I feel about work.
Yeah. That's how I feel about life.
Yeah. I like the work thing, but.
I was like, you know, he's like, so how's it going? You know, your first year in, you know, what are you thinking, you know? And I'm like, God, I'm like, you know, Art, it's all right. It's good and everything. I don't know if I really want to do it. And I'm like, he just said one word to me. He dropped the sandwich out of his mouth and he goes like this, run. And I
really?
Was, and I just looked at him. I go, really? And he goes, run. And I was like, okay.
Like he wasn't going to tell you that, dude, until, but as soon as you gave him the opportunity to.
This teacher was one of the, you would never know it. If you had him as a student, you'd never know that he was like, maybe it wasn't what he wanted to do that day. Like he came in, that is so hard.
Yeah.
Like as acting. A teacher? Yes.
Yeah.
1,000,000%.
Yep.
And you'd never know it. Every day that Art Gage showed up for work, it was like, it was the best day on the job for him. And so for him to say that to me about a guy who seemed to love what he does, and he was like, if, you know.
Run.
And that's all, he didn't say anything else. He didn't get too deep into it with me. He just said that one word.
Well, you know, I bet he had experience and saw people struggle with it. Like, don't waste time.
Dude,
if you already know the outcome,
yeah,
you might as well give that advice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have friends who are still teachers and you know, a lot of them love what they do, but there are a number who are just like, you get trapped because it's like the benefits are great. And it's like a
true
steady
of many,
paycheck.
Many,
and
any
like,
industry, really.
Right, of course.
You know,
yeah.
You get into it and you know. And too many people are like, don't worry, you're going to get used to it. It's going to be fine. And he was just blatantly honest with you.
Yeah. Like, and I couldn't go to the same keg parties that my friends would throw anymore because their younger siblings were at them.
Oh,
around
town.
Yeah.
That's a big disadvantage.
I mean, I'd literally just go
to.
Did
you include that in your letter of resignation?
I did.
Like, yeah, I can't. Yeah. Yeah.
Can I ask you why? Is there something?
That's all
you
I wrote.
Are you just, I'm like, well,
no longer
going
to be able to teach
some real bitching keg parties that I can't attend anymore ethically. So that's the main reason.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, yeah. That would be. I don't even want to think about it. In fact, I have questions that I'm afraid to ask. I don't want to know.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
So he said, run.
Yeah.
And that's
which
when you,
I mean, he was just like, what he meant was, you know, if there's something else you want to go do, now's the time to do it. You know, like don't wait around and do things you don't want to do if you're sure that this isn't it. And I was like, yeah. So, and you know, at that point I went back to my folks too. And you know, I gave it the old college try. I did it for 2 years.
No pun intended.
Yeah, yeah. And so they were satisfied, I think, enough to be like, all right, let the shithead go see what he can do on his own. You know, let's stop breaking his balls about it.
Well, you know what? They have to, as parents, reach a point where if they don't want you to be unhappy either.
Right. No, true.
And you followed through and did what you said you were going to do.
They're great like that.
So your first summer in Block Island, you went home and didn't, whatever, you worked somewhere else. Did you do something else? Because you didn't teach. You obviously didn't get a job.
Sorry. No, I did go to, I did. I went, so my first summer in 96, I came to Block Island and then, okay, I left this part out. I didn't apply for the job. So what it was, and I didn't teach English 2 years. I lied about that too.
By mistake.
I got a call from my old, or I'm sure my mom called me first, but like my old, the Spanish department in my old, in the junior high school, Aguam Junior High, was losing a teacher for pregnancy. What are they called? Maternity leave. And so they were like, it was a short-term gig. It was a one-year gig to teach Spanish. And I was fluent enough.
You were.
To teach the Spanish one, number one and two, seventh and eighth graders. So it was, and then the money, it was like 26 grand a year. And I was like, that's a lot of money. I'm like, wow. I'm like, damn. I'm like, I'll take it. So I did. I did that. So I was a long-term sub the first year.
Long-term
sub. Yeah. And then I got the job next year as the English teacher, full gig. But I went back to Block Island that summer as well. So 96 consistently.
You run into any of your students on Block Island?
All the time.
Really?
Yep.
I mean, at that time, did you?
No, not as much because it wasn't. Western Mass didn't know about Block Island
right.
at all.
And they, you know.
Now it's all the time. Like people I went to high school with are like, you know, on Facebook, like once a week, like, hey, we'll be out there. Hey, we'll be out there.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's a, yep. It's a, they're coming out now.
All right. So you're doing the bouncing thing now. And for that first summer, were you performing anywhere on Block Island musically?
My first steady gig was the Empire Theater.
Playing on the stage?
Yeah, before the movies.
Okay.
Yep.
Tips?
Tip bucket.
Did you get to keep them all?
Usually.
Really? Because I know some people that had to split it.
Oh, well.
It's kind of mean.
Yeah.
So that was sort of your, hey, anything I can do to play and perform and practice is
good. Yeah, well, it was
catch up in front of people.
It didn't start out with I don't know if I was the first piano player, but Anders Vercelli did it for a number of years.
I know Anders.
Yeah, yeah. Great guy.
Yeah, really great guy.
But I did it. I don't know. It was some deal with Gary. It started with $20 a gig and two sandwiches a day from the cafe he was running, and then it went to $10 a day and one sandwich, and then it went to no dollars a day and one sandwich, and then he came up with the idea of the tip jar, and that's when the tip jar started.
Passing it around.
Yeah, which worked like gangbusters.
It did.
Yeah, it was great. So that was lucrative.
Did he get to grab the tip bucket before you, or did it get handed right to you?
There was a moment where I put it into my contract for the remainder of the summer that the tip bucket was to be delivered to me upon completion of the performance.
Funny how I asked that question.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not staged at all.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Interesting.
You're asking the good ones.
Yeah. Because I know that I've known other piano players there that were not, you know, necessarily treated fairly.
Well, show business is a tough racket.
It is.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You want to make it, you start at the Empire.
But what a good practice, though, to get up in front of people.
It was like, awesome.
I'm terrified of being up in front of people. You know?
And I would do, like, I was just, like, improvising half the entire, like, a half hour of just, like, pulling it out of my ass. And I didn't know what I was doing. And some nights it probably sucked, but some nights it was actually all right.
But it got you that comfort zone, you know?
Yeah.
And it's not a room full of people that paid to come see you.
Right.
Which makes it kind of like.
Yeah,
because
it didn't matter. Yeah,
whatever happens,
awesome. Yeah, it's a bonus.
They're either sitting here in the silence or they get to hear me play piano.
Yeah.
Huh.
It was
that's kind of a cool gig.
It was great. And I was, you know, I was into fish at that time and starting to smoke the dope.
Yeah.
So I would get all.
You know. Back when it was like big illegal.
Oh, yeah.
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 Get arrested for that.
Yeah.
I've been watching a lot of old Cops episodes, and it's pretty crazy how many people got, like, slammed into the ground for, like, a joint.
A dime bag.
There's a joint in the console. Put your hands behind your back. It's like, what are you doing?
Call the SWAT. SWAT.
Yeah. Get the dog.
We need reinforcements.
Um,
Yeah.
Should we listen? I'm enjoying this a lot, but why don't we take a quick break? Are you? Am I making you nervous?
I don't know. It's just weird.
You have a different. I'm going to tell the listener straight up. He has a different look on his face than he normally does. I think I'm going to be the same when he's interviewing me.
You just wait.
I'm so terrified.
Oh yeah,
I'm making me nervous.
All right. Yeah. Let's make some money.
All right, here's our sponsors, and thanks for listening to their ads and supporting them because they support us.
Rich, what are you doing? Are you okay? Do you have a spasm in your leg or something?
Oh, no, man. I'm practicing my dance moves. I mean, I think this one's called a running man.
I'm not sure what I'd call that. What's with the sudden urge to shake your booty?
Well, I'm going to Captain Nick's tonight, and I want to be ready for the dance floor.
Ah, I love Captain Nick's. It's been Block Island's premier live music venue since it opened in 1976.
Well, my favorite is disco night every Monday night.
Me too. The best part is that everyone gets dressed up in their best 70s attire.
Oh, it is definitely dressed to impress.
And then on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, Captain Nick's features some of the best live entertainment you'll find on Block Island.
And Friday and Saturday night, they feature some of the favorite returning acts like Derek and the Funbags, West End Blend, The Blushing Brides. Love The Blushing Brides. Fever, Neil and the Vipers.
Yeah, and Friday and Saturday afternoons, if you want to get there a little early, Captain Nick's has acoustic entertainment on the deck.
And don't forget Sunday Funday with Young Guns, followed by more great live music inside.
Captain Nick's also has fantastic fun food options going all the way until 1 a.m. You know what that means? Late night food.
Yeah. And hey, if you're planning a special event, keep the party going at Nick's by renting out the second floor. It's perfect for wedding after parties, birthday gatherings, but just give them a call and you can reserve that for you and your friends.
Yeah, Captain Nick's also has a great selection of merchandise. You can pick up a cool hat, hoodie, or t-shirt.
Well, I hope to see you and all of our listeners down at Captain Nick's located on Ocean Avenue across from the grocery store.
For a complete entertainment schedule, please visit CaptainNicksBI.com. Hey, Rich. I'm in training to swim from Block Island to Montauk, and I'm going to practice by swimming around the Great Salt Pond first. Can you follow me in a kayak?
Well, first of all, that's a terrible idea, and second, I don't have a kayak.
Well, why don't we head down to Fort Island Kayaks and we can rent one?
Hey, that's a good idea. Will they have one available, you think?
Absolutely. Fort Island Kayaks maintains a full fleet of single, double, and triple kayaks.
Oh, cool. Hey, maybe I'll rent a double and just kind of stretch out a bit.
Great idea. And look, if you don't want a kayak, you could also rent a paddleboard.
You know, I've always wanted to try that. Do you think they have one big enough for me?
Absolutely. They have a selection of paddleboards, all between 10 feet and 11 and a half feet.
Hmm. You know, I'm not a strong swimmer. I might be a little nervous.
Don't be. All of Fort Island Kayak's rentals come with life preservers, the proper safety equipment to make sure your afternoon on the pond is carefree.
Oh, okay. I feel better now. Hey, maybe I'll just stick with the kayak. I mean, how long do you think we'll be out for?
Well, I'm still working on my speed, but Fort Island Kayak's features rentals by the hour, half day, or full day.
Well, let's just rent one for the full day, just in case. I'll bring some sandwiches in case we get hungry.
Awesome. Let's head down to Fort Island Kayaks, located on Ocean Avenue, right by BI Fishworks. Call them at 401-466-5392, or you can check them out online at bifishworks.com. Hey, Rich.
Yeah?
Are there sharks in the Great Salt Pond?
You know, don't worry. If we see one, I'll just offer it a sandwich.
Hey, Rich.
Yeah?
I am starving right now, so I want to go somewhere that's intimate but has really great food and kind of a fun atmosphere. So, you know what? I think I'm going to head down to Eli's.
Well, they got to be doing it right. They've been there since 1994.
Yeah, and, well, you know, a big part of it is because Chef Erica is always there, and she's making some of the greatest dishes on this island.
Oh, they got some real island favorites in my book. The tuna nachos, the arugula salad with warm goat cheese. Oh, how can you go wrong?
Totally, and you know what's really cool is that the dishes are crafted with fresh local ingredients.
Yeah, and the menu, you know, it changes too. They have exciting seasonal changes to the menu. So, you know, what you find on there in the spring, it'll be different by the fall.
Yeah, and they're always great no matter what there. But hey, you know what I really love doing is sitting at the bar because they have an amazing wine list. And when Rosemary's bartending, she makes a Rosarita, if you know what I'm saying. Uh-huh. And she also, Rich, here's one of the things she does. She makes martinis with just the right amount of ice shavings floating on the top.
Oh, I love that sheen, you know. Along with partners Brad and Ann Marthens, Eli's features a warm, friendly staff of local island service industry veterans, and they're there and they're going to make sure that your experience is absolutely perfect.
And they've got an extended season, March to November, and then they open back up for New Year's.
Yeah, I've been there for New Year's. It's fun.
Cool.
So, but they don't take reservations, so you will notice, because it's so great, there's a line out the door.
Yeah, I'm going to check the menu first online at Eli's, BlockIsland.com. Hey, Rich, guess who I'm dressed as?
Let's see. You got crown, beard, trident. Are you a professional wrestler?
No, I'm King Neptune, duh.
Oh, sorry. King Neptune. Oh, you know what? The Neptune, that reminds me, I got some family coming out and they're going to stay up at the Neptune house.
Oh, yeah. I love that place. They've got 23 modern condo style units, right?
Yeah. What's great is they've all got full kitchens with full size refrigerators. You know, maybe you don't want to eat out every night. You want to, you know, make something at home, or maybe you caught some fresh fish that day and you want to cook it on your own.
Right. You know what else? They've got great views and a heated pool, tennis courts, gas grills, picnic tables. They've even got a game room with a pool table for the kiddies.
Yeah. I mean, it's got everything you need to stay there and enjoy a great visit on Block Island. Sammy and the staff, they're always on hand. If you need anything, they're right there for you.
Sammy is so sweet and so nice. And you know what? The staff's great. And the best part is the location is awesome. You're tucked away from the hustle and bustle of downtown, but you're still a short walk to everything. The beaches, restaurants, you name it.
Yeah, I don't think there could be a better location. And, you know, they fill up quick in the summer, but the shoulder season is a great time to visit them as well. They rent spring and fall. Check their website, NeptuneHouse.com.
And we're back with me.
There we are.
Thank you, sponsors.
Yeah. Thanks to sponsoring Mark.
Yeah.
All right. So back to Block Island now. There's clearly you followed an evolutionary path here in two directions, both in business and in music. So why don't we, I want to go over the trail twice, once with the music. So you're bouncing.
Yep.
And you're playing piano at the, at the Empire
at,
Theater.
At the Empire.
That's your first.
Yep.
So when did the door open to actually paid gig?
Nick Atchison, bartender at Captain Nick's, was running the open mic at Club Soda on Wednesdays.
Yep.
I had an accordion.
I remember that.
The musical instrument I had with me. And Nick invited me to, I started jamming with him because he lived next door above, what is now Poor People's Pub.
Right.
And we got together, played some music. I went to open mic, played there, started playing music with people from open mic. And then...
So you would chime in with your accordion and some singing with other people?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Just jump up. And then how did I get, like, at Nick's?
Yeah. Like, when did you... What was your first, like...
One night when I was bouncing, Nick's had a PA system, but they didn't have a sound guy. And the PA system was... pretty old, pretty banged up, pretty old. And one night there was a band playing, forget what band, and one of the speakers went out. And I think I was able, because I knew a little bit about PA systems, to like reroute the amplifier, like put both speakers on one channel or something, and got the speaker working again. And then that was the first thing I did. And then this guy, Will Worthy, was DJing disco nights on Mondays, and I was bouncing, and he was a musician too. And was talking to him, and then he was getting ready to not DJ disco night, so he passed it off to me. So my second summer, I think I started DJing disco night on Mondays. And then
what was the equipment back in the day for that?
Like CD players,
CDs,
yeah, you literally had to
have the next CD and the song queued up and ready to go.
Yeah,
okay,
which was like, I mean, again, like huge step up from vinyl.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah,
but still archaic compared to
today. I'd have like my little, you remember those like folders with the plastic pockets with
I have all my Sega games and my video games, PlayStation.
Yeah. Yeah. So I had like two of those filled with CDs, all, you know, coded and labeled, alphabetical, whatever.
Was that at a point where you were already burning? Could you burn CDs?
Yep.
You could burn and have certain CDs ready to. Okay, cool.
And there were these disco mix CDs that would come out. So you basically all the ones you need. At the end of the day, like once the disco mix CDs started coming out, like I could get through the whole night with like four of those.
Right.
You know, so.
Yeah. Things changed fast with this once CDs came along.
Yeah.
And then digital.
Yeah. And then it went to the iPods.
Yep. Yeah.
And that was.
Those are coming back, you know.
Yeah, they're like collectors. If you have a first gen iPod in a box, it's worth like $50,000.
Yeah.
Something crazy.
And they said that a lot of people are looking for them because they, sorry, I wasn't talking into my mic there. They want a way to listen to music without being interrupted by phone calls and texts.
Right.
That's a pretty neat concept.
I've heard that too.
Yeah.
Yep.
It makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, because now you can listen to something, but ping. And
you're right. You're always waiting
who's
for the
texting me or calling me and is it business or whatnot.
Yep.
So, you know, but, all right, I digress. So that's your first like public gig. You're now a disco.
Yeah, yeah, but it wasn't really the public because like the DJ wasn't on stage back. So I was in the booth on the side of the stage. It was in the DJ booth.
Okay.
Off to the side.
Like a 70s movie.
Yeah.
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 Saturday Night Fever.
It was like a 70s movie. Some nights.
Easy. Wink, wink.
Not the good nights.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it was fun.
And by that, you mean you got to wear polyester.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, of course, my favorite of all fabrics. Yeah. Nah, it was fun. It was awesome.
Oh, and the sound booth wasn't it in the to the right when you came in the door? Now it's store
gear
equipment
storage,
and stuff in there, but it used to be kind of in there.
That was a DJ booth.
So you didn't have much interaction with the public. A little bit.
It was cool. Like people, I had my Pete Monge.
Yeah.
Pete Monge was one summer. He was like the summer of Pete Monge, I remember. And it was like, he was out every disco night. He was like, disco night's my night. I'm coming out Mondays. I'm like, cool, man. And he would always stop by and hang out with me at the booth. In fact, he started writing. I wrote in Sharpie next to the DJ booth the dates of this, all the Mondays in the summer. And Pete had to come in and he would initial next to the date when he. I'm like I'm gonna hold you
his time card.
Yeah, at the beginning of the season, he's like, I'm gonna come every disco night. I'm like, oh yeah, let's see. And like, I made a little chart for him.
Is it still in there?
I remember painting. Begrudgingly, I did paint over it. It was after he had passed, too. I was like, one last look at this.
All right. What about performance, like playing instruments and singing? When was your first break on that?
Well, the first time I ever played at Nick's was with the Pete McConnell Band, my first summer. Again, on accordion. Pete played there like four times each summer, four weekends a summer, and invited me up. I played with him, and then I got to know the guys in his band, his drummer. Tom Hooper worked at Sugarbush. And so after they came back every summer. And then I think after summer 98, I decided to give up the teaching gig. And that winter was when I started going up to Vermont for the winters.
I was going to say, so, you know, you clearly weren't a year rounder.
Nope.
I tried my
third summer. I tried that winter.
Yeah.
I made it till November 1st. And then I was like, I got to go.
Yeah.
So I went up to Sugarbush and got a job as a snowboard instructor.
And it may seem like not that long ago in the 90s, but it was a different place to try to winter than it is now.
Oh, yeah.
Now you have all the amenities and transport. I mean, the ferry schedule sucked. You it wasn't like now you can pop off on an island really easy.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. No, it was just too quiet for me.
Yeah.
Like too quiet. I was like, this wouldn't be good for me.
Yeah.
So I split. But
and I ran into him and said, run.
Go.
Run.
Yes. No, my life is just one big series of me running away from things.
Well, you know,
basically. Yeah.
It's also could be called staying one step ahead. it depends how you look at it, right?
Yeah.
So you start going up to Sugarbush, resort. Is that what
ski
that is?
Ski resort.
Yeah.
I've never
skied. I don't know. It
was
about
the 20s was a great. Once I got in the rhythm, you know, the remainder of my 20s is pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Block Island, Sugarbush.
The remainder of my 20s.
Once I figured out that all that work stuff was for the birds, that all that career shit wasn't going to work.
That's seasonal, you know.
Yeah, I got into the seasonal
We'll get to me, but that seasonal thing is kind of cool.
It's enticing.
Yeah.
You're in your 20s. Are you kidding? Yeah. And I was like,
I would never go anywhere cold. I don't know why you chose that.
Well,
because of the crew and the friends and the.
No, I didn't even. The only person I knew was Tom, the drummer, and Pete McConnell, and the guys in the band. And so I just went up there based on that. Played a lot. Like we worked. That's really, I think, where I learned how to be a working musician.
Up there.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I'd always like gotten paid for gigs and, you know, done gigs, but those were like, we would do three gigs a day. And like during the president's weeks, like the holidays up there, you know, we would get in the truck, Tom's truck, and drive from Sugarbush to Killington down Route 100 about an hour, hour 15 minutes, play and operate ski there from 3 to 5, leave early from that gig, go halfway down the hill to the grist mill, play the happy hour there from, show up late to that gig, play there from like 6:30 to 8:30, leave, drive back to Sugarbush and play at the Bluetooth from 10 to 2.
Wow.
Yeah. And we would do that for 10 days in a row sometimes.
Oh, okay. So I'm lost. I thought you were like a ski lift operator or something.
I did that. No, well, a snowboard instructor. You only had to do it one day a week, and then you got your pass.
Did you know how to snowboard?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah.
The things I'm learning.
Yep. Yeah. Okay. I was heavy into snowboarding.
When's the last time you snowboarded?
It's been a while because I blew my knee out in 2001.
If you decide to do it again, can I come and watch?
Sure.
Okay.
Great. I still got it. I was okay. Yeah. I mean, I wasn't like hucking 360s or anything.
No, but the kids you're probably teaching are just learning.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, no, that was
it. Was the craze at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Just like surfing became a craze and everybody wanted to learn to surf.
Yep. So, yeah, that was I moved up there. I lived up there with some block. My first winter was my Block Island buddy, Eric Chicoin. Sean O'Rourke and Adrian King.
Yep.
Who I knew from Block Island. We all went up. So I lied to you.
So you, actually, it's not a lie if you don't mean it. Is that true? I don't know.
Kind of.
That's a lie. So I see, this is something I also didn't know. Your music job, your career, becoming a working musician happened off island more.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think, the Sugarbush band was, I mean, we worked.
You worked.
Yeah. And there's a bigger pool too. You know, there were more gigs. It was like Block Island music, it's amazing Block Island as the music scene it has with the number of people that can fit on the island, first of all. But like, even in Vermont, like there were just more gigs and more musicians around. So there's a bigger pool to work with and there were more places you could play.
Was there like the B jobs and the A jobs, and sometimes you get offered an A job?
How about some C, D, and E jobs?
But then suddenly you get offered an A job, like their band's sick, can you take this spot? Was that like something that would happen, like shuffle around?
Yeah. I mean, but I wasn't getting calls for the A or the B bands at that time. I was like, yeah. I was learning. So literally I was like in the D and C bands.
Yeah, we have a main stage and we have a lounge.
Yeah, we have a pool and a pond. Pond would be good for you.
You'll be in the lounge.
But my always, like ever since I was a kid, my first band, I played with guys older than me. That's all musically, that's always been what I want to do.
Great way to learn.
Yeah, I always want to be the worst guy in the band because you're going to learn the most.
Yeah. Well, and congratulations. Thanks. You're great at that.
Yeah. You're great at sucking.
You know, so, all right. So then when does did you perform at Nick's before you took it over?
They moved open mic night over to Captain Nick's for a time in the late 90s.
Yeah.
And that's when I started playing at Nick's like regularly.
Yeah.
With, it was me, John Whitaker, Jamie Siffo, and Andy Furr. Our band was called Turtle Gopher.
Okay.
And we played Thursday nights at Captain X.
As a band?
As a band.
Paid gig?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. And that was my first regular steady gig with a band on Block Island.
Nice.
Thursdays with Turtle Gopher.
Back then, did you have like dreams someday I'm going to run this place and I'm going to be performing? No, no idea.
No.
No.
No. I was like, I was just psyched to have a gig.
So how far did you go with performing at Nick's before the transition when you took over?
The big transition was in so when I blew my knee out, the winter that I blew my knee out snowboarding, I couldn't snowboard. So I was sitting around, it was like January. It happened right around the first week of January. So like my winter was shot and I had this rental in Vermont. I had nothing to do. And, Mike Finnemore would always call me with crazy ideas. He's like, hey, how about a music festival? I'm like, wow, that's actually not a crazy idea. So I didn't have anything else to do. So I spent the winter of 2001 organizing the first Block Island Music Festival.
Were you the manager at Nick's by then?
Nope.
No, not yet. Still
nope.
No.
Nope. Okay. DJ. I don't think I was bouncing at that point. I might've taken over a sound guy at that point. I don't remember.
Yeah.
But I was doing more stuff musically and not,
And he called you with this idea and you're like, man.
Yeah. And so like, I think he thought like Friday and Saturday, like three bands on a Friday, three bands on a Saturday. But I booked eight bands a day for 6 days straight, starting in Tuesday to Sunday. So I called him and like, yeah, I'm going to need the Hi-Vee for a week. Can we do that? He's like, what? I'm like, no, I got it all planned out. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. He's like, sure.
It worked.
It worked.
That music festival was very successful.
It was a blast.
It rode all the way to COVID, right?
2019. Yeah.
Yeah. That's, so you
2019 years.
And I would imagine a lot of that is just getting people here and back. And did you have,
that was everything.
And who's got to stay overnight because they're performing till the last boat leaves.
It was all like where logistics. I learned how to coordinate things. And, you know, it was, and Jamie Siffo helped. I mean, he was the production coordinator. So like I put it all together, but Jamie like was the one running the stage, managing and doing the transportation back and forth. But, you know, the first, you know, it's basically a two man show. It was me and Jamie the whole time, all 19 years. Jamie came back even after he left the island. Jamie would come back year after year.
I think I know him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Big goofy redhead.
Yeah.
He wouldn't mind me saying that.
No, that's all right.
Yeah. You know. He was awesome. We had some laughs. And I mean, we figured it out together, like how to do this. And it was crazy.
Well, you know what? You get through that first one, that's it. It only gets better from there. If you survive that first, you know, and it's probably because you were laid up, you know. Imagine, if you were super busy, you probably would have gone with the three bands.
I would have been busy snowboarding.
Days. Yeah, three bands a day for 2 days. Got
it. Yeah, none. Sure.
But you're like sitting there like, how about another couple bands on Thursday?
Yeah.
And you know, Fenimore rolled with it.
Yeah, it was great. I mean, any crazy idea I had. That was the other cool thing about Nick's and working for Mike was like he had a bunch of crazy ideas, but also any crazy idea I had, he was like, sure, try it. Yeah. You know?
He's like, how much?
That was really what it was, the question. Yeah. You know, it was like, how much? And I was like, I don't know, give me a couple $100.
Didn't even crunch the numbers and realize it was a good return for the investment.
Nah, he didn't even do that. Like, I never asked him
let's
book Van
in
Halen.
His mind, he's like, well, look at that. Well, here's the sales receipts, and it cost me $400 to do this. Yeah. Okay. This was a good idea.
Yeah.
And what week was that?
That was always the second Tuesday of every June.
Yeah.
So no matter where.
A great shoulder season thing.
That's the thing. Why
he pumped up a.
Yeah. That's why we want. That was his reasoning. He's like, the hotels are available.
What can we do to.
Yeah, what can we do to get people out here? And, you know, to Nick specifically.
I mean, that's still the trend now. They're no longer trying to publicize Block Island during the summer anymore because it's packed.
Right.
So the whole job of the Chamber of Commerce and the Tourism
shoulder
Council
seasons.
Is shoulder season, shoulder season, shoulder season. Yeah. It's working, too. It's a long shoulder season.
It's definitely working. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. So, but that still, you coordinated all the bands and you put the music. Great achievement there.
It was fun.
Did you start performing that summer more regularly or?
2001, that was like right around that was Turtle Gopher. That was when that was all.
Yeah.
That kind of,
and then
that band was happening.
Did you play more and more and more? So in other words, what I'm getting at is in the heyday, probably just pre-COVID, you know, piano bar, dueling pianos, performing on the deck outside, disco night. You were doing all these different things.
Yeah.
Did all that kind of start after you? So when did you transition into managing? So I think if I remember correctly, you went from employee to manager, employee to leasing the place.
Yeah. Start manager in 2006.
How many years?
Manager 2006, 7, 8, 9. 4 years as the general manager.
And that's, you were booking all the bands
I
and
was
doing all that stuff.
Running Nick's.
The whole
thing.
Soup to nuts.
Yeah.
Employees, housing, everything. Yeah. That's a good skill to learn.
It was,
personalities.
Was just thrown right into it.
I can't even imagine throwing the personality of performers into the normal challenges of a staff that all has to, because that's a challenge, keep a staff all intact and working and happy and living together. And, you know, and then you got to throw in bands, you know, that have their own dynamic and personality. And did you ever have to kind of, not that it's shoddy, but the band room above Nick's is nothing exciting or special.
Right.
You know, did you have to be very careful to explain to them? What was the hardest challenge with a new band that had never come to Block Island before?
Yeah, it was just basically explaining Block Island to them.
You got to drive down. You got to unload onto the ferry.
Yeah.
We'll come by with a truck and we'll pick up all your gear. And,
yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I find in anything to do with that, Block Island, not just bands, it's kind of like either people love it. They're like, this is really cool.
Yeah.
We just unloaded our gear. We got on a boat and now we're playing a gig and we get to stay overnight. Or they're like, we're never coming back to do this
again. 90% of the bands were all like, got it. They're like, cool.
Okay.
You know, and then like 10% of them were like, what? This is it? And, you know, it's like, well, okay, no hard feelings. Obviously, this is not for you.
And then did you, it seems to me like the quality of the bands coming.
Well, that was the nice thing was because, so then I started taking over regular season bookings at some point before I became manager. And that was like nice because I had this big group of bands that would come out and basically audition. Not audition, but like they would take part. And yeah, if there was like a band that was really good, we'd start to bring them back on a Wednesday or a Thursday. So I would, we would, you know, we would bring bands back that worked, that were great.
We're ready to take you from a C to a B.
Yeah. And I mean, that's how it is. And like, that's, it's always been like, I mean, some bands that are like, you know, Badfish, the Sublime tribute.
Yeah.
Those guys started playing at Nick's when they were all 17 as Racquetball. Like they were a ska band.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep. Joel and Scotty. And
I think I saw them someplace kind of big.
Yeah. They were like.
They ended up.
Well, that's a, so that's the point, right? So they started when they were kids and then they played Nick's a little bit and then they played a Wednesday and a Thursday and then they did the Badfish thing and then they started doing Fridays and Saturdays. And after like 3 or 4 years of Badfish weekends, it's just awesome, right? It's banging in there. And then they got huge.
Yeah.
So that next summer I call up Joel and I'm like, hey man, he's like, dude, I'm sorry. Like we're doing like 2,000 seat theaters now.
Yeah.
Like,
you'd have to, that's where I saw them.
And I'm like, yeah, you know, they're off. So that's like, that's the progression of booking bands.
So
and,
not to put it down, but Nick's A stage is someone else's B stage. It's a million, always a better stage to get, try to get to.
Sure.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
And then,
but I, that's just better, quote unquote, better stage is a relative term.
Yeah.
I've never found a better stage than Captain Nick's in my life.
Oh, yeah.
Well, Rich Dart will say the same thing about Sundays. And Rich Dart's played like the Sydney Opera House. He's played Radio City Music Hall. And he's like, the deck at Captain Nick's is like, oh, like you don't get to do that. Like it's, you know. It's a really
special
place to make music. And Nick started it. That's what Nick originally saw. He just a place to, for people to get together and celebrate and dance and rock and roll.
You carry the torch pretty well.
Oh, right, thanks.
So you, at some point,
it's more like riding a like a mechanical bull. I don't know if I carried any torches. I just lucky I didn't lose my teeth or
get off the mat
and
jump back on again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. A few times.
So then you get approached at some point in time to actually just take over.
Yeah.
Well, you get to manager and now you've already learned booking the bands and you got it down pretty good. So what did Mike just decide? Maybe I can just step away from this whole thing. Would you like to just take over and,
he offered
and
me,
lease it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He offered me a few different options. And I chose to purchase the business and lease the property.
Okay. Yeah. How many years did you do that?
I had a, I ended up doing it all in 10 years total.
10 years?
Yep.
That's a lot of time. A
lot of time. And the restaurants came in 2014.
So now clearly, now you, it's your place. So is this when you could just start to decide, these were your creative ideas for yourself to get up and do things like piano bar?
Piano bar was it. Yeah. That was that was, you know, the thing. That,
when did the Booze Beggars evolve?
Oh, that started in 2002.
Okay.
So that was very earlier. That was on, and Sunday afternoon started in 2002.
Sunday fun day.
Yep. And that was me, Whitaker, Lightning, you know, the guys.
Yeah. Yeah. And you still carry it forward with the young guns now.
Yep.
Yeah.
And Booze Beggars are still playing. We still do gigs. Yep.
Yeah. Once in a while.
It's fun.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. Yep. Fun times.
Yeah.
All right. Then you just glazed over it. But so you get the offer to take over and actually lease the buy and lease the space. And now Nick's is your baby, right?
Yeah. I mean, I don't own the building. I just, you know, but I have the business. Yep.
And then you suddenly decide to rent. To lease two more businesses and run all three on Block.
Yeah. Oh my God. But I mean, to be clear, like at this point, you know, Katie and I were together. Mm-hmm. And, you know.
It's still a lot.
I didn't, even when I took over in 2006 as manager.
Yeah.
That was the first year Katie started working in Nick's, and she knew everything about the bar. So I didn't know dick about running a bar.
Right.
But she did. So yeah. She kind of
covered the bases.
You know, told me what to do. And she was right.
Yeah. Of course.
The bar. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, well, the restaurants, it was like, you know.
Yeah, well, whenever you're running a business, you have your sectors that you're just, this is what I know and do, and then there's always the more difficult gray area.
Yeah.
So what was that like, stress-wise? So just in case we didn't make it clear, you then, all in one shot, you were already leasing Nick's, and you lease the Mohegan Cafe and the Harbor Grill in what was the Harborside R&D. Right. And you ran all three of those for how many years?
Six years.
6 years.
Until 2019. At the end of the 2019, we didn't renew the leases on the restaurants, and we re-upped on Captain Nick's.
Without having any clue that COVID was coming.
Right. No idea.
Genius.
Or that the Harborside would burn down.
Well, you know.
I mean, it's crazy.
Things happen. Yeah. Wow. I remember... when we first, we knew each other to say hi and stuff. And then we'll tell that story another day, but I ended up working with you one day a week and whatnot, but I'll never forget. I don't know if somebody else told me, Mark and Katie are going to run the Mohegan and the Harbor Grill. And I think I sent you one text.
Yeah.
What are you thinking?
Yeah.
But you guys did a great job.
Thanks.
It's a hard, it's hard to run one of those rackets, let alone three.
It was a lot of work.
Yeah. You had some housing worked into the deal with the leases, right?
Yeah.
So that's a big, big factor.
It was.
I mean, when I ran my restaurant, we had zero housing. Occasionally, I would rent a room for the lowest tier.
Yeah, no, that option, like, that doesn't happen anymore.
No.
Finding rooms to rent. And, I mean, it was getting... The writing was on the wall. Like it was getting hard.
Yeah.
And you know, Katie and I were both stressed out all the time. And
it's super stressful. Like,
what do we want to do? Do we want to try and enjoy our lives a little bit, or like just keep
despite what people think, you don't make money hand over fist every year in every business.
You know, I mean,
you have
I'm
a
not
good year and you have a okay year.
Yeah. Again, like my mentality growing up, like everyone in my family, it was either a teacher or a nurse or an insurance salesman. You know, the women were teachers or nurses, and the men were either teachers or insurance salesmen. No one was like, there was no starting a business or entrepreneurship or, you know, that just wasn't really. So I was expecting, I never thought I could do anything like that. So it never was like, you know, an option or even something I'd think about. So the money's good. Some years it's better than others.
Oh yeah, no, it's not always good.
But you know, it's, put it this way, it's like, it's okay. It's okay enough to keep doing it.
It's a living.
You're on Block Island and maybe you're working,
and you get a
16
break in
hours
the winter.
A days and you get a break in the winter. It depends on your life. So like, does it all even out to like a kind of a middle class? I'm sure maybe a little better, whatever, worse some days.
I don't think I could survive the restaurant business if it was a 12-month a year.
I don't know. Like, you I don't know how people do it.
I don't either. Well, there's different, you know, I kind of feel like it's different if you have a restaurant that's, the seasonality of Block Island is hard.
Because
you by the time you get a crew trained and management in place and everything good, it slows down again. And
you
know, and then you don't know what you got. It's not like you can slowly build up the right people for the right jobs and just give them a career full time. So,
right. Yeah, it's tricky, but it was a crazy experience.
Yeah.
Crazy. It was great.
Yeah.
I loved it.
Oh man. It was, I don't know. I still couldn't believe you did that.
Yeah.
I was,
talk about like wild.
Yeah.
Just,
And then came the terrible. Well, what did your folks think of you at this point? Did they ever say, "Hey, you were right"?
I might have told this story too, but yeah, the one time, I don't know when it was, like 2000, whatever, early teens, something like. I was a few years into Nick's and the restaurant, so it must have been like mid, 2016, whatever. My parents were out, and my sister and her family and kids, and we were all going to dinner at the Spring House, and my dad came down to Nick's, and me and him were having a beer at the outside bar in the afternoon. And, you know, I can't remember. He was like, oh man, well, you know, looks like you're doing pretty good. You know, everything's fine. You got restaurants and you got, you know, I was like, yeah, you still think I should have been a teacher? And he was like, all right. So it was nice. I got him to admit he was wrong.
Yeah.
Which is great.
Well,
but no, he did. But no, he was like, this is really great.
You know? I don't think a lot of stories end as well as yours.
No.
With someone who either drops out of college or finishes college and then drops out of the career they went for. Like you realized and you went forward and somehow when the opportunities knocked, you were ready to take advantage of them and you did it and you became successful. But I don't think that's always the story. So
I don't know.
Yeah. I get where the parents get worried.
You're making it. Yeah. And now looking back, I'm like, well, no shit. They were like, my dad was like, I look at myself when I was in my 20s. I'm like, what a basket case you were. What? Why? Why would you? Of course. Why would they trust you to do anything?
Yeah.
You barely tie your shoes.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know? But it was easier living back then. It's like, keep a car on the road.
Yeah.
You know, keep the least amount of health insurance you can afford and
steal sandwiches off people on the beach.
Get some shitty apartment to live in with your buddies. You're fine.
Yeah.
It's great.
I kind of miss those days sometimes. Yeah. Life was simple.
Right?
Yeah.
So simple.
It was. So then I guess we're getting near the current day.
Yeah.
You clearly decided that, your parents both passed away.
Yep.
Challenging time.
Yeah.
And you just decided, well, you had left the lease go, so you just had Nick's. And then you decided it was time.
That's when I called Chris.
Step back and pass the reins off to somebody else.
Yep.
Yep.
And that's, again, when the podcast started. So, again, from this point, I think everyone's caught up on that.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
I'm good. I've heard enough about you.
Right. Well, I should mention this is going to be different moving forward, though, because now I'm at a point where.
Yeah. Less of a.
I'm not coming back full time anymore.
Right. Yeah.
Which maybe I should have mentioned at the beginning.
Well, whatever.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
Yeah, but you're going to be back, you know, and performing and everything all throughout the summer. You're just not going to be there 7 days a week.
No, I've given
it. It started last year.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it started with, going out, you know, and having Rob Davis cover me. And but it's official. I'm not. Rob is taking over my position as entertainment coordinator. I've given up our studio, which is my room for 20.
The home base where two guys on Block Island.
Dude,
started.
I gave up my treehouse. I'm like literally, I'm giving up my treehouse.
Well, you know, there's always something brighter on the horizon. You'll find a new treehouse. You're looking for a treehouse now, aren't you?
Anybody have a treehouse? Except, can we make it a pool house?
Well, I don't think that's going to happen.
No.
Well, you never know.
Seriously, does anyone have housing?
Yeah, you would, right? You would entertain staying somewhere. Because now, so you're going to be going out and performing. You're going to be doing a couple nights a week.
I'm going to be out on Block Island heavily throughout May, the end of May, middle of May into middle June.
Yep.
The Outlaw Tour was just announced. It's happening again.
Yep.
So I'm going back on the road with Willie Nelson and Bob Dylan, apparently, this summer. Which is crazy. Did you hear about this?
No.
So Dylan's on the tour with us, the entire tour.
Oh, sounds good.
So Willie and Dylan, we're out rolling around. And then I'll be back. And then the plan is for me to DJ. I'm going to be playing with the Young Guns on Sundays.
Yeah.
And then DJing Disco Night on Mondays when I'm here.
Yeah.
I'm not on the road. Yeah. And then I'm going to be doing some weekends and some dates in and out. So it's not like I'm.
No, but it's not like it used to be where you roll in Memorial Day weekend and you leave and
it's Columbus Day. Yeah. Or it's not like, you know, I have my room and it's like I just go to the beach and, you know, sit on the deck and drink coffee and watch the grocery store.
The big boy decisions in life.
Yeah.
Yeah. But in all seriousness, though, you would love to have a place to crash this summer.
Yeah, I'm dead serious.
Okay.
If anyone has, like, you know, some of our listeners are like, they've got places out there and they're like, oh. Maybe it would be fun to have a guest for certain days over the, you know. I'm willing to trade if you, you know. And look, really, if any of you rich people with big, nice pool houses, you know, you like to have cocktail parties, right? I'll play the piano, whatever.
Yeah.
Hey, want to invite your friends over? You can tell all your friends, we have our own piano player that lives in the pool house. And then just ring the bell.
Could you still DJ a wedding?
Yes. I'll DJ.
For the right pool house.
Look, for the right pool house, I'll do. There's not much I won't do.
Yeah.
Let's put it that way.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
And I'm respectful. I'm clean.
I'll vouch for that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll.
Well, the clean part.
Yeah. You want me to like run into town and get some groceries every now and then? Sure.
So I get it. That's a good idea. Cabana boy.
Yeah.
Piano playing cabana boy bartender type.
Yeah. One of those. What could possibly. Yes.
Nothing.
You're sharing my vision.
Yeah. I see it. I like it.
And augmenting it.
God, I'm going to see how much a pool costs. I might want you.
You could, dude. Come on.
Here's your pool house. Oh yeah, I can't afford a pool.
Come back. Yeah. I'm like giving Patty a massage, like a pool. Oh, hello, Richard. Yeah. Patty's like, hi, Rich. I'm like, Patty's very relaxed right now.
Oh my gosh. I have a little pool, but it's one of those
inflatable ones.
Yeah, yeah.
Does it have a house attached to it?
No, it does not.
Can we build one?
We'll make space for you though if you get in a pickle.
Thanks.
We can't find somewhere for you to stay.
Thanks.
Yeah. So ultimately, on the serious note,
yeah,
you know, your job at Nick's, you know, you were there full time, so you had it came with a, you know, part of that was some housing, and
I did have housing
since you're going down to minimum.
I'm subcontractor.
Yep.
Level.
Yeah.
So I'm in the band room.
Well, I hope someone reaches out for
you. In the band room.
Well, this has been. I've enjoyed this conversation.
Thanks, Rich.
Did you?
Yeah, I hope it wasn't boring or.
I still feel like I miss stuff, you know, like your DJ business and all that stuff. That had
That was a whole nother thing. I just like kind of gave it like outline or something.
How many years did you do the DJ business?
I started that in 2003 and then got rid of it when we took the restaurants on. So 11 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a good gig.
Great gig.
Yeah.
I loved it.
Was there any part of it though that. Well, I guess in your business, and even in the entertainment business, you just weekends are a thing. That's it.
Yeah,
yeah.
Saturdays, Sundays, but it was great. And the fall, I watched the shoulder seasons grow on Block Island because of the wedding industry,
yeah.
And a huge part because of the wedding industry. You know, it really started going ramping up, and it was like, oh wow.
And then the gentleman you sold the DJ business to, along with the you know, history of it and the connections, great guy.
Oh, yeah, John.
Yeah, John.
Yeah, he's awesome.
Great guy. I think he DJ'd.
He has the Mary D. Ball.
Yeah, and I think he DJ'd both of my kids' weddings.
Yes.
Pretty sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
I had a DJ lined up, but it didn't work out. So that was you.
Yeah. Sorry about that.
That's okay. You got busy.
What are the odds?
He did a great job. He's a really nice guy.
He is a nice guy.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
Very, very good. Cool. Well, I don't know. Should we wrap it up?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, what else? There's nothing else.
Well, unless you got something.
I got nothing, man.
Well, now we know more.
That was interesting.
I got one more question for you. When did you create the Dr. Westchester?
2012.
Yeah. I think that might have been our first moment of more than just saying hi to each other. You had asked me to play a pirate. Was I Captain Nick?
Yeah.
Yeah.
In a little web series thing. Which
I was like, sure, I can do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. You still have any of that footage?
I have it all. It's still uploaded on YouTube, but it's set to private. I've taken it down.
Oh,
but it is still, it does still exist.
I mean, I want that for my reel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll send it to you.
Okay.
You got it. Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding. But that was fun.
You do not want that for your.
But I'll never forget. That was a fun thing.
That was a fun thing.
You can be captain.
Yeah. You can be a pirate.
Yeah,
hey, you look like a pirate.
I'll come do it. Yeah.
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 Who knew it would be the beginning of a huge media, you know, empire?
Oh, controlling the island. Yeah, probably not.
Probably not.
No.
But
all right.
Listen, thanks. This has been fun.
Yeah. Appreciate you taking my questions.
Yeah.
And very different. This is very different, isn't it?
It's very weird.
Yeah. I'm not looking forward to my weirdness.
Don't worry. You're next.
I know.
The coin has two sides, Richard.
Yeah.
The coin has two sides.
Well, hey, if we didn't cover anything and you want to know more about Mark or for any reason at all, please email us at twoguysonbi@gmail.com.
Yeah, and don't forget to follow us on the social media stuff. And wherever you listen to the podcast, subscribe. Most importantly, just tell your friends.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks for listening. And you know, this has been fun.
Thanks to our guest.
Thanks to our guest, Mark, for taking time out of his day to sit with us. Me.
I was really busy today, too. I had a lot planned, you know.
Hey, Mark.
Yeah?
I'm just wondering if you've ever tried this. Have you ever tried snowboarding while playing the accordion?
Yes, I have, actually.
Did you really?
Yeah, I have. In the desert in Phoenix, Arizona.
Oh, nice. Sandboarding.
Yeah. I don't suggest it.
No.
No, the accordion.
Oh, okay.
Oh, and one last thing. Whether you're a local or just visiting Block Island, pick up a copy of the Block Island Guide. Published annually for the last 35 years, it features 120 pages full of killer photos and all the details you need to know. Most importantly, it's fun to read.